Star Wars, Everything Changes, Part 3 of 4, a sequel to the Nothing Changes audio drama from Razor's Edge Audio, by Nathan Butler. Chapter 6, Infiltration. Standing watch outside a tertiary tunnel leading into the Yuuzhan Vong installation within the cursed moon of Kallakas was not the most mind-numbing duty this side of the expanse between galaxies. It was simply the most mind-numbing duty on this hunk of rock. Motrelor and Feltic, two tall, muscular, excruciatingly bored Yuuzhan Vong warriors, had known that the fall of Domain Shai after Shadeo Shai's defeat and disgrace would take them with it. They just hadn't expected to find themselves shipped out to the cursed moon of Kallakas to guard a project few outside the installation knew existed. The gods had allowed them a chance to continue their service when Jolantar took pity on them during her last leave. Motrelor continued to blame it on his good looks, but Feltic knew it had been his wiles that had won her over and saved them from further disgrace. But there was no opportunity for honor and glory in the name of Yun Yamka when guarding a big hole in a big chunk of rock in a big nothing area of space. Even the Chazrak saw more action than this. Feltic continued his customary guard walk from one side of the entryway to the other. Step, 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 turn, step, 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 turn. The monotony was worse than a thousand deaths, Feltic thought. Motrelor continued his steady pace as well, passing Feltic at the midpoint of their journey every time around. As children, they might have exchanged pleasantries or conversation as they walked, but Domain Shai's disgrace had been plenty degrading for one lifetime. No need to add reprimand by Commander Deacon on top of it. Step, step, pass Motrelor, step, step, turn. Step, step, pass, Motrelor, step, step, turn. Feltic stopped in mid-step and blinked. Motrelor had been in mid-turn, but now stood on shaky legs, the majority of his face missing, a blaster wound through the back of his head. As Motrelor's body fell forward, he could make out the silhouette of a human standing behind where Motrelor had stood. Feltic had just uncurled his amphistaff to attack the infidel when he heard a faint snap hiss behind him. As he turned to face the blue skin behind him, whom he perceived as the immediate threat, he heard a blaster shot from behind, then all went black. Apparently, you really do hear the one that gets you. Darius threw Corso a wry look as the Vong warrior fell to the ground in a lifeless heap. To his side, his ignited lightsaber, shortened to a light dagger, glowed violet against the slick obsidian rock of the entryway.
I was getting to that,
he said, deadpan.
Yeah,
Corso said.
I figured I'd save you the trouble. The least I could do,
Corso said with a smirk and a mock bow.
For the noble lord Dariaskovar.
Darius raised an eyebrow, not sure whether to laugh at the sarcasm or feel concerned at his companion's need for levity. He could remember a time when he had been so casual about danger. Back then, though, it had always been danger carefully controlled by his father, as he and Traven had trained in their family's compound on Sylvina III. His father had always ensured that each new challenge included enough danger to hone their senses. It was not beyond his own ability to save them from dangerous failures if the need arose. Darius could only recall one time when he had required his father's help. His back still bore a scar from that exercise, but he had grown far better at energy dispersal since then. Corso stepped forward to the entryway, peering in with eyes both biological and in the Force.
Looks clear for the most part. Of course, I couldn't sense Vong anyway, so you never know.
Well, we wouldn't want to hinder the possibilities for surprise now, would we?
Of course not, Your Lordship.
Darius sighed. Corso waved a hand toward the entrance.
Vale, party of two. Your cave is ready.
Darius waved his arm in a sweeping arc toward the entrance.
After you, kind sir.
Oh, really? Oh, nice. You spoil me.
As Corso entered the tunnel, Darius caught himself laughing to himself.
Well, it's the least I could do.
5 standard minutes later, with only a few further encounters, Corso and Darius turned a sharp right and came to a new opening in the tunnel. From several feet back, it occurred to Corso that he couldn't see any flooring beyond the opening. Stepping to the edge and peeking over, he realized why. Stretched out below them was a generally circular chamber, with walls perhaps scored by some giant worm or snake crawling its way through the rock like a space slug. One edge of the chamber, the only large one they had yet come across, and by the size of it perhaps the only chamber of this size necessary for an operation as sparsely manned as this, was dominated by a series of what seemed like vines. The vines, if they could be called such, were hanging in groups of 6 from outgrowths on one wall and seemed to have been given a disproportionately large amount of breathing room. To the other side of the chamber, refuse dominated one corner, as small lizard creatures scurried about, eating from the refuse every so often. It was the bank of organic technology immediately below them, though, that held Corso's attention. A fleshy, almost scale-like chunk of black or brown biomass took up the entire width of the room, stretching out nearly to the center, beyond which the room appeared to be open. Even more captivating than the biomass itself, though, was the presence of a disembodied head resting on it, speaking with a Vong female clad in a twitching, living robe. Daria slid up to the wall on the opposite side of the opening.
You know, I once told Sierra that these Vong would look a lot prettier if their heads were removed from their bodies.
Darius tilted his head.
And?
Nope, I was wrong. What is that?
It's called a Vilip. I'm not sure how they work, but several were captured when a slave colony was liberated in the border of Kiss Space. It acts like a long-range communicator.
Corso did a double take.
Wait, they set up slave worlds out here in the unknown regions, too?
In Kiss Space, yes.
And you've managed to liberate them with just your own resources?
Correct.
Corso was impressed.
Damn, you blue boys get around, don't you?
Darius held up a hand toward Corso, signaling for him to cut the chatter. Corso promptly clammed up as Darius knelt at the edge of the opening, listening intently to the conversation taking place between Vong and Vilip below. After a few moments, the guttural exchange below ceased, and the disembodied head folded itself up to be stored away. The female Vong didn't seem at all happy. But then again, when exactly had Corso ever seen a Vong in the mood for a good jubilee? As the Vong stood in deep thought, murmuring in her own tongue, Darius murmured to himself as well.
Interesting.
Corso gave Darius a look that screamed, "Well?"
"Do share."
Darius seemed to be taking a moment to double-check his mental translation.
It would appear they are using large worms to burrow from the core to the surface. Those large blob creatures we saw in orbit are there to collect the core materials as they explode outward from the pressurized core.
Corso nodded.
Ah, physics.
Darius stared at him.
Academy physics, Dar. You didn't think I made it this far on my looks alone, did you?
Not hardly.
Darius answered, reaching for the lightsaber hanging from his belt. Corso turned back toward the chamber, but swung his head back around when he realized what Darius had said.
Wait, what's that supposed to mean?
Darius remained silent, flipping the switch on the hilt to change back to full saber mode. Darius moved closer to the edge, ready to jump down upon the unsuspecting Vong below, but Corso put his hand in front of the reborn Jedi.
I've got this.
In the central chamber of the Vong facility, Jolen Tar was far from amused. Commander Deacon had done more than his share of talking on his latest voyage with the Supreme Commander. Now even the High Priests were talking of relieving her of her duties. She had grown too self-righteous in her position. She thought she was too dignified to take orders from Commander Deacon. That wasn't it, of course. She was just better, as the Priest caste always was when it came to the Warrior caste. But the High Priest had to deal with the Warrior caste on a regular basis, so it was no surprise that Deacon's complaints would come to her from her own immediate superior among the religious servants of Yun Harla. Now, with her work so close to completion, she might not be able to see it reach its fulfillment. What's next? As if on cue to her very thoughts, from behind came a padded thump and a comment in the infidel's basic tongue.
Boo, bitch.
She spun on her heel to face the blasphemer, and came eye to eye with the emitter of Corso Vale's blaster foil. Corso promptly fired on the surprised Vong before the peril of her situation could even register. The blast tore through the Vong's eye socket, killing her instantly. As Corso fastened the blaster foil back into its holster, Darius dropped down behind him and began studying a luminescent surface on the far side of the biomass. As Corso stepped closer, he could make out faint, oozing glyphs on the mass, apparently a readout of some kind.
Can you read any of this?
Darius gave him a look of mock reassurance.
Technically, no.
Corso could feel a sigh coming.
However,
Darius continued,
based on what our departed friend here was saying a moment ago, the next rumble we feel...
The entire chamber shook with the force of a mild earthquake.
That rumble we just felt should be the first of the worms reaching the surface. The collection has begun.
They might be too late already. Several thousand standard meters above the surface of the cursed moon, the light atmosphere and twinkle of distant stars shining through it were replaced by a torrent of liquid fire. The stream flowed with a vengeance born of millennia trapped in the moon's core to leap into the skies and into the waiting maw of the Quemoth. As the volatile compound entered the creature's vast mouth opening, sacs inside the creature immediately began to collect the liquid and regulate its storage with greater efficiency and instinct than any mere machine could hope to manage. The Yezin Vong's new ammunition was finally within their grasp. Chapter 7. Miscalculation. Within the confines of the Yezin Vong's central chamber, Darius and Corso listened to the steady rumble coming from all around them.
You know, Dar, I know good and I know bad. and this is bad.
Expecting agreement, or at least stoic indifference, Corso nearly slapped Darius back to his senses when he responded.
This may be the chance we need.
Pardon me, Red Eyes?
Of all the Jedi he could have ended up teamed with, he just had to get the one that was a few points short of Sabacc. Darius continued, oblivious to or ignoring Corso's confusion.
The compound is highly volatile. We need only reach my shuttle and ignite the stream. One solid explosion to the flow.
And we take out the Collector and the moon at the same time.
Corso finished.
Precisely. Calacis should be safe. The configuration of these tunnels within the moon should keep any explosions through the core from sending debris flying outward. I wouldn't want to be in front of any cave entrances when it goes, though.
Not a bad plan for a guy who looks like he just stepped out of a bad holodrama. Let's do it.
Corso set out toward the nearest side tunnel. As Corso led the way to a tunnel from the chamber, Darius turned to follow. It looked like this task would be easier than he had hoped. He had even managed to tolerate Corso's remarks without killing him. Meditation must have truly paid off in anger management. 3 steps into his stride, though, Darius found himself flat on the ground, his nose bleeding with the distinct feeling that he had just had someone's feet planted on his back. In their survey of the room, they had presumed that the tunnels above were all uniform with the one they had used for entry. It had never occurred to them, until now, that is, that someone else might enter the chamber as they had. If he hadn't been wearing a padded House of Darius Kova bodysuit, his back might have already been broken. As it was, he was out of breath, which was good, given that the ugly Yezin Vong face he saw upon rolling over would have made him gasp in quite an undignified manner had he been breathing. From the direction of the tunnel, he could sense Corso's surprise and concern, but could also sense that Corso was already into the tunnel. The Vong did not seem to have noticed him yet. As he felt Corso begin back in his direction, Darius took the selfless step he knew Traven would have taken in his place. In his mind, he cried out to Corso, "Go!" The telepathic jolt through the force of his command must have reached Corso, as he stopped short, seeming to weigh the situation. As the Vong above him punched down on his chest, he was at least relieved to sense that Corso, apparently understanding that the situation outside was more important than Darius's plight, had turned to continue onward toward the surface. Above him, the Vong pounded again, and again, and again. Chapter 8. The Embrace. As Corso emerged onto the surface of the cursed moon, he could sense the chaos and the force around the moon. He had never taken the time to consider the Force as a living, breathing entity before, as some of the more introspective Jedi had, but he could certainly feel it now. It was as if the Force itself was revolted by the raping of the moon of its core. Or perhaps the disturbance he felt came as a warning, an echo backwards from the future victims of the Vong, if the substance was allowed to be used for the glory of the Yezin Vong. Or perhaps it came from his distress at realizing he had no idea where in the hell the cloaked Dream Reborn was waiting. To no one in particular, Corso screamed,
"Where is it?"
Below Corso's feet, Darius Kova, the noble Lord Darius Kova of the Kiss, opened his eyes. He tried to move, but found his hands, thighs, and ankles bound by the vine-like tentacles he and Corso had noticed attached to the wall earlier. His mind raced with the implications of being trapped in what he knew from reports could only be a Yezin Vong embrace of pain. In front of him, apparently quite proud of himself, strode the Vong who had attacked him, bearing the markings Darius had been told to expect in the Yezin Vong warrior caste commander. He spoke to Darius in the Vong tongue.
"You must be cleansed, Jedi. Let the embrace purge your mind of all but the exquisite pain of your own suffering."
Then the pain began. On the surface, Corso had given up looking for the Dream Reborn.
"Yeah, go, Darius. Right, Darius. Where'd you cloak the damn ship, Darius?"
With a final moment of contemplation, Corso knew he had no other course of action to take but the one that had already been nagging at the back of his mind since he first realized the ship could not be found. Cira would understand. Or she'd kill him. Either way, no one was going to be saved from the Vong on the cursed moon if he didn't do something. Reaching into a pack on his belt, Corso pulled out a beckon call.
"All right."
Corso sent a preliminary signal and received a prompt response. He began entering specific instructions into the unit. Top-of-the-line technology, Cira had said. Yes. Yes, it was. Damn. He received confirmation that his instructions had been received and initiated. That done, he stuffed the unit back into his belt and turned back toward the entrance to the Vong chamber below.
"Oh well, worst case scenario, I lose the ship, but I die too. Better killed by a Vong than for Cira to know I lost another ship."
Corso brandished his blaster foil and ignited its blade. With a blur of motion, Corso entered the tunnel, his emerald blade lighting his way.
"You'd better still be alive, Kova."
Below, the object of Corso's concern was alive. but to say he was well would be pushing it. Darius faded in and out of consciousness within the excruciating hold of the embrace of pain. Every muscle felt like it was on fire. Every breath sent another tendril of flame through his nerve endings. His vision was swimming in front of him. If he wasn't so stubborn, he might have believed death preferable to the torture he now endured. He could feel his consciousness ebb with the flow of the pain, only to be jolted back again by the next jolt upon his increasingly fragile frame. In front of him, the blurred Jezzan von Commander, Deacon, his subconscious whispered, recalling the earlier eavesdropping as if it were light-years away millennia ago, curled his hands around the end of his amphistaff.
"Still alive, Jedi?"
Darius's vision swam again, and as he tried to focus, he could make out the figure standing before him. He saw not an amphistaff, but a lightsaber. Not gnarled bong hands, but rebel work gloves. Not Commander Deacon, but another.
"Let's see what we can do about that,"
the figure said.
"Shall we,
brother?"
Before him stood Traven Kova. To be concluded. You've been listening to a Chrono Radio presentation of Star Wars, Everything Changes, a sequel to the Nothing Changes audio drama from Razor's Edge Audio, starring Matthew Gordon as Darius Kova, Michael Sheridan as Corso Vale, Brian Bassetti as Traven Kova, Ian Bowie as Commander Deacon, Deanna Atkinson as Joel Antar and Cira Vale, Jeff Driscoll as the Prison Guard, and Nathan Butler as Shokan Lan, Montel, Emperor Palpatine, and the narrator. Written, directed, and mixed by Nathan Butler. Based on the Prelude to Hope Forgotten Knights concepts developed by Nathan Butler from concepts and characters originally created by Devin Reed. Star Wars Everything Changes is a non-profit fan production produced for the enjoyment of the fans. All rights to Star Wars and any other copyrighted materials herein, including any music and sound effects, are reserved to their original creators. No infringing claims are intended. The writer and director would like to thank Devin Reed, Chris Newsom, Ryan Jordan, Chandler Morse, Megan Russell, and everyone else involved in the original creation of Star Wars Prelude to Hope, its prequel comic, From the Ashes, and its sequel short story, Forgotten Knights, all of which gave birth to Nothing Changes and Everything Changes. Extra special thanks is extended to Craig Moore, whose wonderful artwork would have graced the pages of Prelude to Hope From the Ashes, and whose concept sketches gave birth to the looks, feels, and dynamics of characters in Forgotten Knights, a.k.a. Everything Changes. And Steve Fluhart, the mixer who stepped up to the challenge of completing Nothing Changes, bringing that original Prelude to Hope storyline to life in a new form. Thank you for listening, and may the Force be with you. StarWarsFanWorks.com, the home of Star Wars fan audio on the internet. It's your home for Star Wars fan audio genre news, a comprehensive catalog of fan-made Star Wars radio shows, parody tales, and serious audio dramas. With behind-the-scenes features, a message board, reviews, tutorials, convention coverage, an internet movie database-style directory of the entire Star Wars fan audio community, and the only fan audio community-recognized Star Wars Fan Audio Academy Awards held each year. StarWarsFanWorks.com. Fandom has a whole new sound.